listening to Let's Eat In. I'm your host, Kathy Irway. We're here at Roberta's Pizza at Heritage Radio Network's headquarters in Bushwick, Brooklyn. And today's show is brought to you by Whole Foods Market. And today we have on in the studio with me is two guys who run an amazing underground wine club called The Noble Rot. Check out thenoblerot.com. And they also have various other projects, which we'll get into a little bit. But so thanks so much for being on the show, John Cristaldi, Johnny Cigar. That's sorry, right. I just, whoopsies.
Oh, no.
Stage
years, name. Years of work. That's it. Out the door at Roberta's Pizza.
Okay. Yes. This is a very talented performer who does one-man shows, and he has a series coming up called Kammerspiel at the theater in the Lower East Side called...
Dixon Place.
Mm-hmm. Please check out Kammerspiel. It should be a great...
Kammerspiel, Kathy.
Kammerspiel.
Come on. Yeah. It's got a subtitle, too. It's a parenthetical drama for the American alcoholic.
Awesome.
It has nothing to do with... it's not like a class or anything like that. Yeah. So.
It is a parenthetical drama.
It is.
And then those are in parentheses.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. The whole show is sort of parenthetical.
I like it. I have actually seen the show, and it's wonderful, but he's revamping and revising it, and I can't wait to see all the new parentheticals involved.
Me either.
And we also have Brian Quinn from The Noble Rot.
Yeah,
thanks so much for being here.
It's great, yeah.
Cool. So, and you are also a performer, but a drummer.
Right.
And what bands do you play in?
Playing right now with a few singer-songwriters. Even though I was trained in jazz, I kind of end up being this jazz refugee sometimes where it's like, you know, just doing pop music or things like that. It's just kind of what's prevalent in New York, so... ZAV, Stargazer, this group with formed by Stephanie Davila, who been in the city for a few years and now is starting to really work a lot more with her group. And we're performing at the City Winery on Wednesday the 24th.
Great. And that's with Stargazer.
Yes.
Okay. Cool.
Yeah, it's going to be great.
So you always have shows coming up, it seems.
Yeah.
Both of you, too.
Could use more, but it's good.
I don't have that problem, Brian.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
Yes. And so tell us a little bit about The Noble Rot, because you both, this is a two-man operation here. It's a wine club, and you started it recently. So you've had three events so far?
Let's see. This year, we're going into our second event. We started back in, July of last year, and tried to do a couple events a month, and that worked out. That worked out well. It gets a little stressful with all the other extracurricular things that we're doing. And definitely, I don't know, would you say we've done six or seven maybe?
Mm-hmm.
Eight, yeah. And just kind of trying to figure out a good formula in terms of how often and how frequent to do them.
And new themes every time.
Exactly.
New themes, exactly. Yeah. You just had an event a week and a half ago.
Mm-hmm.
And what was the theme for that?
We did a class called, it was an informal class called Taste Like a Pro, and we had a winemaker who we brought in from the Napa Valley. His name is Jeff Morgan, very talented, very cool guy who also was a West Coast editor of Wine Spectator and does wine for Dina DeLuca and all kinds of things. He's got a laundry list of accomplishments, and we showcased, he's got three wines, so we brought him in, and it was cool to just listen to him and talk about all his knowledge and know-how and history and just to sort of hear from the person who's made the wine, you know, what how it got to the bottle and what we're tasting in the room. It was a cool thing.
So it was really educational.
It was, yeah.
Now you can taste like a pro and everyone.
That was the idea, yeah.
That was the first one was more like a class than anything. Other ones have been almost party-like.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
rooftop partying. Yeah.
Kind of, yeah. I mean, the format is great. We're fortunate that we can just adapt it to... any idea really based around wine. So, we also involve music, which is part of what I do. It all started basically with Johnny approaching me and saying, you know what? I really enjoy wine. I want to do something.
I have this problem and we need to figure out a way to, curtail it, make it more,
he needs a way to legitimize
useful
it first.
Useful in the world. Yeah.
Of course, all of our friends, the dinner clubs, for years have done those great formats, and they've been really popular, the Whisk and Ladle, Razor Shiny Knife, and basically we're doing that without food.
Yeah, exactly. I think the two of us
so let's just get really, really drunk.
You don't need food to go with wine. Actually, no, that's we can talk about that in a second, but the having gone to these events, you know, we sort of saw how the social aspect of the event, you know, sort of culminates around food and around that mm-hmm. experience. And there is always wine involved, usually in cocktails, depending on where you are. And that was, you know, I would help out sometimes and maybe try to pair some of the wine with the food and maybe give my input or something like that. But it really didn't. No one really cared that much. All they knew is they wanted more, and I needed to come around quicker with more bottles of wine. So we thought it would be cool to come up with a format and start a club where the focus was all about wine.
Right. Wine is the main player. Food plays second.
Exactly.
That makes sense. Yeah, I know people can be ravenously thirsty at these Whisk and Ladle dinners, and it's just kind of like, I can understand totally where you guys are coming from.
But even the party ones, the events that were more party format, I guess, we're not just getting people drunk.
Right.
It's not just like, okay, imbibe.
Oh, you have
and
to
then
spit it out. Yeah, totally.
Well, no, actually, no, we don't make you
no
spit it
spitting
out.
But, at our events.
But it's great to learn about it as well and not just have this where you just don't think about it. Like, you're just taking this in and completely not processing.
Exactly. And that's what we recognized. And I think we decided what we wanted to do was get people thinking about wine, because a lot of people are drinking wine these days, a lot more than they used to. And, I mean, wine, you can tell by all the wine bars that have popped up around the city and the innumerable wine shops. And, I mean, there's just sort of wine is everywhere, and wine's being made everywhere nowadays. And it certainly is important to pair wine with food. But before you sort of get to that, I think learning about it and sort of trying to figure out what you like to taste, and will help you in the beginning to sort of figure out, okay, there's this huge world of wine out there, and I at least have an idea as to what I like. And then once you sort of know what you like with wine, then you can start thinking about pairing it with other things, and, you know, which wine you want to down down in one swirl, one swig, or, you know, you want to hold on to. Maybe you want to age something, mm-hmm. or, you know, all kinds of things. There's all sorts of stuff we're trying to get into with this club.
Cool. So do you think it should start with a wine education when you try to pair with food? Should you think about which flavors you like and then pair the food afterwards?
That's a good question.
Well, I think most people know what food they like. I mean, mm-hmm. New York is such a restaurant-based city, though. Mm-hmm. Obviously, your book kind of deals with quite the opposite context.
I don't know anything about what you're talking about.
Anyway, I think people, it's clear, like, wine should not be some kind of mystery. Everyone knows what kind of food they like.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, there is no right and wrong with wine. It's just about what...
Actually, there is a right and wrong with wine. But, well, Jeff Morgan, he would have at least...
It's mostly based on people's taste.
Yeah.
You know?
It is. That's our goal. What Brian's totally getting at is we want people to trust their taste and their palate. So even if somebody does say to you, oh my God, you can't drink white wine with a steak. Mm-hmm. Maybe you can. Maybe you can drink white wine with a steak because you like it. It tastes good. You know, maybe, I don't know. What do you think, Brian?
It's ill-advised.
But fair enough.
So we do bring in some food elements, of course, to make sure that people don't just fall over at our events. But it's a social atmosphere. Mm-hmm. No matter what, even if it's a class, something like that, we want people to meet each other and not just, and, you know, have those shared experiences with this great crowd of people we have in New York. So just come together, meet someone new, and learn something new you've never thought of before about wine.
Mm-hmm.
Very cool.
Yeah.
And
I was going to add, it's a comfortable format. You know, I mean, I think there's if you've never been to like a wine event or a wine tasting, there's certainly a there might be a preconceived notion of how these things go, and I mean,
there's
typically
an air of elite or just kind of
formality.
Formality. Yeah.
Exactly. You show up and, you know, you pay $15, $20, $30, and you get a taste of three or four wines, and somebody is also pouring wine for, you know, five other people, and they're sort of talking to you about it. You're not really having an engaging experience where you can spend time with the wine, spend time with the people, and get to know the people who are talking about the wine. It's just kind of like you come right. in, boom, and, you taste, and you...
And at your events, you can hang out for longer, stay, it's a party.
Enjoy the music.
Enjoy the music.
Mm-hmm. We're not just spouting our religion on wine and what have you. Yeah, it's just... Yeah, it's an enjoyable experience, not just sterile. You know, yeah. So.
Well, I can't tell you how much I'm looking forward to your next event, because I'm actually making food for it. So this will be another step in the food pairing for your wine club. And actually, I don't know very much about wines myself, so I'll be very intrigued to see what you guys pair with the dishes I'll be making. It's going to be an aphrodisiac-based meal, because it's on February 16th.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
Which I think is Mardi Gras, we found out. But.
Oh.
Okay, it'll be a Mardi Gras-themed meal.
Yes. Mardi Gras.
We're actually going to fly all the guests down to New Orleans for this. So
you got to get some necklaces.
Get your ticket now.
But, yeah.
Wow, Mardi Gras is going to be crazy this year in New Orleans with the the Saints win last night.
Right, that's it. That was the World Series, right?
Yeah, something like that. But it should be. I'm really looking forward to this. We're gonna do four courses.
Yep. And
we're gonna pair some wines. I mean, the truth be told, and I don't want to come on. I'm a self-proclaimed master sommelier, and that's that's the way that we roll. And Brian, you're a self-proclaimed gentleman or something like that.
Absolute
gentleman. We don't really we don't know a lot about wine. I mean, we know a great deal about wine, but I mean, we have a lot to learn ourselves, and that's one of the other reasons we wanted to sort of get into this.
Yeah, and you always have different wines that you're exploring and showcasing at these events.
So this is going to be a great learning experience for us, because now we have some food that is, very, very definitive choices here that are going to have to be paired fairly well. So it's not like, people are going to be walking around tasting hearts of palm and drinking something that is just making their mouth go, what the... What's going on?
What are you thinking for the hearts of palm dish?
Exactly. And that's...
What are you going to do for the hearts of palm?
I don't know.
That's why you're avoiding
me. No, I was...
It's a vinegary
All I'm
one,
saying
yeah.
is yes. I mean, we want to make sure that it's a good experience. So I need to think about it.
But obviously, all of your foods are being prepared in the sense of this is stuff that you should be able to do at home, change up your normal routine, do something interesting. And I think that would be the same context for the wine.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, even I myself don't drink a bottle of wine. I mean, I live in a studio, but like, it's kind of hard to break. I know Johnny like is a different animal, but when do you just drink wine at home alone or something, or like even you have to have friends or entertain in some sense. It's not as frequent certainly as going out and just getting a glass of wine from your local restaurant or whatever. So. That would be a nice thing for people to understand, like, okay, this is how I can start approaching this and just doing it regularly and not in the alcoholic sense. But
you know. Right.
Yeah, no. I mean, unless you're throwing a party at home, too. And, it's one of the... For instance, with the Super Bowl the other night, how cool would it have been if instead of people were pounding beers and throwing cans out the windows, they were pounding bottles of wine
and smashing
them against the walls. I mean, that's...
I totally hear. One of the biggest discrepancies in between dining out and eating in is the wine prices. I mean, you pay for a glass... And it's the same, comparable to a bottle.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And so I think that a lot of people are now, realizing and this is a good way to budget is enjoy your wine at home and have more parties at home and get bottles, get to know bottles.
Couldn't agree with you more. In fact, I've depending on where you go, Getting a wine by the glass sometimes for me is not the most enjoyable experience. Sometimes the wine's been sitting out, especially if it's a red wine.
Yeah, that's the other thing.
And it's like, I mean, I've just paid $9, $10, $11, $12 for this glass, and it's like, oh, what am I drinking? This is vinegar, and I would rather have bought that bottle and headed it home, and I'll have a beer out when I'm out at the restaurant.
Someone once told me a good tip when I was at a house party. If you find that you like a wine, buy a case, and then you'll like this wine. You'll know what to pair it with, and buying a case is even more cheaper.
Well,
no,
it depends.
I'm a creature of, I just like change and trying things out. I mean, this is the whole thing. If you want to learn about wine, sure, you can, of course, if you enjoy your palate and this is your end all be all of wine, great. Grab a case. Maybe that year is like, you know, you do a bunch of, or 6 months, you go through that case and it's wonderful. But to really learn about wine, you just try it, try different things.
Right, try a bottle here and there. I mean, if you really love something, then
if you're really
sure.
going to drink a lot,
get a case.
Yeah.
If you're really going to, if that's your prerogative, then sure, buy a case.
But if you want to learn and or challenge yourself, you can buy a different thing each time and maybe it works out, maybe it doesn't, but it's certainly... It's always a surprise and adds a little bit of variations.
So. It's more economical too. Maybe not everybody has the ability to buy a case that can be expensive.
And it's fun finding that surprise hit or, you know. And if you miss, then what? I mean.
Exactly. And don't forget, I mean, we live, well, if you miss, big deal. No big loss. You don't have 11 other bottles sitting around, you know. And for those of us who live here in the city, you know, it's the idea of having a case of wine isn't yet another thing to clutter your apartment with. I mean, how many of us have wine fridges? Really?
Decanters? What, you don't have those? Or?
Oh, I do.
Excess of different sized wine glasses?
I actually threw out my regular fridge. I don't keep any food in the house anymore. We just have a wine fridge now. But, you know, I'm sorry.
No worries.
I apologize. I know that's not your style, but...
What? Oh, no. I mean, I'm all for learning more about wine and, you know, what is necessary and what isn't necessary. Just like with food, you know. A lot of people say you have to have a bunch of tools, you know, a stand mixer and all that stuff. And it's actually a creative challenge to see how much you could do with as few things.
Well, so for yourself, what do you most commonly gravitate to if you're going to order a glass of wine, or what's your taste?
Yeah,
I have no idea. I'm hoping that I can help figure that out a little bit.
Exactly. Well, that's it. That's
even red or white. You don't know. I mean, it's just kind of either or.
They're all good.
Yeah.
I'm kind of like that guy in Sideways who's like, tastes good to me. Oh. Yeah. Sorry. I know that was a bad one.
Well,
you know, maybe I should take a cut to a
help you out.
Quick break right here, mm-hmm. Brian. You picked out a song and. We'll be right back.
Cool.
Yeah. Hey, welcome back. It's Let's Eat In with Johnny Crisalt. Oh my God, I did it again. Johnny Cigar, Brian Quinn. I'm your host, Kathy Irway. If you'd like to call in, you can also call 718-497-2128. And the guys at Heritage Radio Network here will take your call. So we were just talking about, you know, wine preferences, pairings, and I'm drawing a blank. I have no idea what I prefer. And I feel like that's something everyone should really have.
It's common, though. I mean, if you were to walk into a wine store, you just see bottles everywhere. I mean, where do you start thinking? You know, where are you going to go?
I don't really know if I want to commit because I appreciate all different kinds of wines. And
but you know what? That could be, and I'm gonna play devil's advocate here, maybe because you haven't spent time actually thinking about the wine when you're drinking it. Maybe you get a glass, you get a bottle, and you're drinking it, and you're like, oh, this is a great time, I'm having fun. But you're not actually thinking about what you're tasting. And if you, what we try to do is we say, okay, you know, when you drink wine at our events, we usually go around the room and we pour everybody and we wait for everyone to have a full glass. And then we smell it, and then we take a sip, and we sort of swirl it around in our mouth for a little bit to get some air. We do a little aerating, and sort of just wakes up the wine and gets your taste buds, you know, into action. And then you swallow it, and you think about it for like a minute, and during that time, you know, you sort of start to pick up on different things that you maybe hadn't before, some particular fruity
some very
characteristics.
Specific verbiage here.
Yeah, well, yeah. We're not, yeah, and the, you know, the tar and the you know, the chemical fertilizer, or the blackberry jam and toasted fig and olive. I mean, these are very cool things. You know, if you're looking for descriptors,
cat piss is a big one.
Cat piss is
it
a
is
big
actually
one. Cat
I've
pee.
Been
it really is.
Things like that. Yeah.
Yes, and certain Sauvignon Blancs that come out of New Zealand. So think about cat pee next time you're drinking your Marlboro Sauvignon Blanc.
Don't think too
I
hard.
I love that, that reckless abandon of, you know, the sound of these words and the what they conjure. It's all good because let's face it, this is what it tastes like, right? It's more honest than...
Yeah, I mean, think about what wine is. I mean, it's grown, it comes out of the ground. It comes from a grape. So obviously you're going to have berry. You're going to have some berry flavors depending on what's going on. But there's a whole other process to wine and winemaking that imparts characteristics like the barrels that it's aged in. They can impart all kinds of different characteristics. And you can pick up on that when you start thinking about it. So in your case, maybe you realize, you know, after you come to our event, you know, hey, you know what? I actually really like red wines that are sort of big and fruity, or I like a red wine that's really sort of lighter in style, like a Pinot Noir, and that's because of the kinds of food that you like. And you're like, yeah, you know what? I don't like to have a big, huge, meaty wine that with my salad. I need something that's a little lighter. And through this process of elimination, you start to figure out what you like.
Yeah, I'll have to do some more meditation on this next time instead of just gulping down.
Yeah, think about it.
Well,
yeah.
There's, I mean, scientifically, if you can get down to it, there's the palate has, your actual tongue has sweet, sour, bitter, and salty.
Mm-hmm.
And all of the flavors, of course, you're experiencing are from the nose, which has hundreds of different...
sensory receptors. And
what about umami? Does that play into wines at all?
Yeah, why not?
Sure.
I'm sure it is to somebody.
So I'm doing the food for the 16th that I find to be Valentine's Day appropriate aphrodisiac foods. Do you think there's any wines that are particularly aphrodisiac or romance inspiring?
Brian Quinn knows all about. He's real suave with these sorts of things.
Oh, yeah?
Things.
Oh, yeah,
that's Look good. At the way he's dressed.
Wait, what would you pair for, or what would you, if you're just going to have, you know, a date for wine and, you know, maybe some snacks like cheese and crackers, what's a really, really sexy date wine?
I mean, it's totally depending on the taste of both.
No, just tell them. Just both, tell them.
Right.
Tell them what it is.
The 2003, no. I mean, yeah, it's all about just, I think, the experience together, obviously. So there's a different, I mean, I you know, I'm not going to be professing romance tips here, but I think just, obviously, you want to have something that's dynamic as you are.
Okay.
There you go.
Something bold.
Something bold, something
confident.
Something that sort of says, you know,
right.
Hello. You open, right. You pop the cork and it's like, you know, that,
here I am.
That you know, music comes on, that sort of, I'm forgetting who the actor was. Anyway, Merlot. Okay, there you have it. Why don't you get a nice bottle of Merlot? Okay?
Is that like a particularly...
It's red. It's a red wine.
Colorful, flavorful.
It's very red.
You
know, if I was going out on a date, and I used to do this. I don't go out on dates anymore.
Because
I'm married. I go out on dates. I do go out on dates, but with the same person.
With me.
or with Brian Quinn, which is totally, totally exhilarating. And I definitely swing toward, not just one bottle. You want two bottles. You want to start with some bubbly.
Oh, this is a good idea. See? Do two bottles. Don't just be tied to one case they don't like it.
Start
also.
With bubbly because bubbly really gets the... Gets the senses.
That makes
like,
so much sense.
You get relaxed, but your taste buds start to get
it's
sort of excited. Very effervescent. It's very sexy. And then you sort of move on to red. You move on to your meaty red wines, which now are, and you know, I mean, look, let's be honest here. They're going to, you're hit with a powerhouse wine and it's tannic and it's like full of alcohol and you're going to get a little tired. So you've got to sort of move the party to another room.
Yeah, the level of alcohol is kind of like also determines the strength of what you're doing. So maybe if you don't want to knock them over with just this like what is, you know, just what is this?
Let's remember this is two bottles of wine for two people as well. No?
Oh, we're talking about, okay. Yes.
Or you could be luxurious and you don't have to finish them.
I
mean,
I would finish them.
Okay, well, you know. You can finish them later.
And I would also have maybe a dessert wine in the fridge as well to go along with the chocolate cake that you probably had purchased from, you know, Dean and DeLuca or whatever.
Here's an idea. Why not cook with half the bottle?
Mussels with the white wine.
Well,
mussels with the white wine.
I mean, that's crazy.
Red meat with a reduction sauce.
That's your prerogative.
Do you
cook the alcohol out. What good is that?
Do you guys cook much at home? Or?
Not enough. I don't have a wonderful kitchen in my Lower East Side tenement studio.
Gotcha. You know, but
I actually do. Like, I cook a lot, actually.
Yeah, Johnny's really prolific. Yeah.
For your non-dates?
Well, you know, you got to do something in the evening.
And what do you like to cook at home?
Oh, man. I like to do some challenging things. We have a bunch of cookbooks from, you know, like those Thomas Keller folks who do all those fancy,
whoa,
you know. Yeah, it's usually a travesty. I mean, dirty every single thing in the entire kitchen.
How can you look at that book after what we went through last winter? I don't even want to, like,
I can't.
No, you're that, guys.
Yeah, no. Yeah. Simple foods, actually. I do do enjoy, I don't know if you're familiar with Jamie Oliver, but that is a cookbook that I have.
Okay.
We have in the house.
Nice.
And, you know, he's simple. He's Italian, a lot of Italian, and really just like, I like that he's all about just throw things in. Like, there's no measuring. He's like, throw a handful of milk in there and, like, you know, and a shoe full of,
cool.
you know.
Yeah, yeah. Approachable guy.
Exactly.
By the way, I was referencing nothing against Thomas Keller or last winter, but I was referencing quite a elaborate dinner that Johnny and the guys at Razor Shiny Knife and Girls all put on that was based on Thomas Keller and Grant Achatz's crazy menus that cost $3,000 a plate that they put on.
It 21 was courses.
21 courses, and we recreated those course by course, and it made us all insane.
I don't think we went to bed for 2 days.
No. Yeah, there was a lot of flying around every store in the Bay Area looking for white chocolate, I think, at one point. Or I can't.
Michael said last night, I think it was a 10,000-calorie meal.
Well, I mean,
it's a good thing we didn't eat it.
Yeah.
We didn't eat anything.
Yeah, I was just eating, like, random tidbits of, like, broken tweel batters and those crackly, bubbly, deep-fried tapioca balls.
Caramelized bacon, right?
Yes.
I mean, literally, caramel.
Caramelized pears.
Yeah.
No, dehydrated, clear, like, stained glasses of pear slices. Wow. That was fun.
You're not going to do any of that at our event on the 16th?
Well, I'm trying to take it easy. I'm like, you know, I can appreciate the Jamie Oliver approachable cook at home type of stuff.
Cool.
And also I do like his, you know, kind of farm to table. Well, that's also Thomas Keller too, but he's also really into knowing your food and where it came from.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
This is all very aside.
Knowing your wine and where it came from.
Knowing your wines. Yeah. And, you know, I'm very curious about and what wines will be pairing, because we haven't figured that out yet. Right?
Well, all right. I'm being elusive. It's a surprise. Mm-hmm. We don't like to give away too much.
Ah.
You know? Right, Brian?
Right. Well, yeah, you have your methods of trickery.
So you know exactly what wine you're going to pair with the Hearts of Palm, then?
Yeah, we do,
yeah.
Actually. We
okay.
Do.
The thing you were saying earlier, know your wine. I mean, I'm always shocked because we get a lot of different, you know, spectrum of people that come to these events. And sometimes someone who's just, you know, quietly enjoying it, I mean, you'll talk to them and they'll really know quite a lot about what they do and don't enjoy about wine, and they'll quite often, if they do like something, they'll research it. So, you know, we don't just cater, it's not just the kind of layman, you know, or people that don't know about wine that we cater to. Of course, there are quite a group that quite a few that come in that have a great amount of knowledge, which is mm-hmm. wonderful in New York, because I mean, probably in California it's just a lot more prevalent, but in New York I think it's sometimes we think it's not as
it's
easy
true
to find.
And we learn a lot from them as well. It's a
yeah from your guests.
It's a social learning experience.
And there's a lot of, now that you've expanded, I'm sure there's a lot of people who just kind of heard about it through the grapevine. And it's just all mixed in there. There's 40, 50 people usually at these events.
Mm-hmm.
That's a good crowd.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
not, about that.
Not too oversized or...
You know, yeah, we keep it low so that you can focus on the wine, you know? I mean, if you have 80 people in the room, it's difficult to sort of command everyone's attention and really talk about the wine, which is why we're there.
Cool. And so one last, I guess, tips for anybody shopping for wines at home this Valentine's Day to maybe pair, or how do you pair with whatever you're making?
Well, you mean food-wise?
Yeah, just to make something.
Google is a fabulous resource.
Okay.
Really? No, yeah. And all kidding aside.
Do you have any favorite sites that you look at, or what about wine stores?
Gosh, in terms of that's a tough one. A lot of wine blogs and a lot of wine stores, you kind of have to do a lot of reading through. And wine stores don't always have a lot of information on their site about pairing wine with food. But
I follow a lot of Twitter.
There's a lot of Twitter, exactly.
People that talk about, I mean, these are, you know, Eric Asimov, people who are talking about wine all the time, who obviously have careers with it, but they'll throw out little ideas. And if you pick them up and like, wow, that could sound incredible, then you just store that away and use it. And it's, you know, if you're going to pay attention and research and you know, you'll find out some great things. Or you could do it last minute and just use Google. But you know.
I agree. I mean, it's just use the internet and plug
Twitter,
in.
Twitter, Google, the modern wine lover's guide.
Because people are tagging all sorts of things, and you'll come across something that's been posted that maybe is pertinent to the food you're cooking.
Crowdsourcing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's changing
like
the
it.
Industry. It's great.
I agree.
I actually heard about this at a recent New Media panel on food, and people were talking about how wine... blogging, Twitter, that was a big thing nowadays.
Mm-hmm. Little tiny vineyards in Italy, they can tweet about whatever, and then people will follow, and it's almost like they're at the vineyard. They'll talk about what they did that day, things like that. And whereas, you know, 10, 20 years ago, you couldn't even, I mean, even 10 years ago, you couldn't even get the bottle.
Yeah, you would, if you were to do something like, you would go and get a resource like Windows on the World by Kevin Zraley, or you would, you know, you'd look to Jancis Robinson, or you know,
or how about your new wine
Hugh
site
Johnson
called
or my new wine site
Wintology
wintology.com. That's right.
Check out Johnny Cigar's wine musings.
Yeah,
we
chronicle noble rot events there, and I talk about my own wine meanderings and that sort of thing. So that could be a resource.
Cool. Well, thanks so much, guys. It looks like we're about out of time. But definitely everyone should check out thenoblerot.com if you want to hear even more and learn more and bump elbows with a bunch of cool people. And also Kammerspiel is coming up.
That's
When's
right.
the first date again? February
12th. That's the opening night. Fridays and Saturdays, 3 weekends in a row in February.
Can't wait for that.
Dixon
That's going to be a real gas.
Cool. Thank you.
And Brian, your show on?
February 24th, cool. Wednesday night, City Winery.
Can't wait.
Yeah.
All right, guys. Well, see you next week.
Yeah.
And I'll see you guys next week, too. I'm Kathy Arway, your host. Thanks again for Nat Wiener and Jack Inslee at Heritage Radio. Thanks.